We want the truth, so watch Truth Wanted live Fridays at 7 p.m. Central. Visit tiny.cc/yttw and call into the show at 512-991-9242 or connect to the show online at tiny.cc/calltw. So you think
it's always a pop. It's always great. Hi, everybody. Welcome to the Atheist Experience. Today is the 9th of October. In the year of our Lord, 2022. I'm your host, Forrest Valkai, and joining me today is the incomparable Mr. Dave Warnock. Dave, how are you doing today?
Doing great. Hey, Forrest.
I'm always happy to have you, man. I'm always happy
always to good to be with you, man.
So just to let you know, if you're watching this for the first time, or if you just love hearing this, the Atheist Experience is a product of the Atheist Community of Austin, which is a 501c3 nonprofit organization dedicated to the promotion of atheism, critical thinking, secular humanism, and the separation of the religion and government. And with that, I'm super excited to get started on the show. Dave, did you have any calls that you were particularly interested in?
No, but I'm just going to say, you say that stuff a lot faster than I do, so I'm glad you got to do it instead of me.
I rush through it as fast as possible.
We've got some good calls on the board. You go ahead and pick one.
All right, so we're going to go and jump right in then with Charles from Texas. Pronouns are he, him, who wants to talk about how Revelation 17:5 is responsible for Catholics doing negative things in history. That sounds really interesting. Charles,
yes,
how are you?
Hey, man, the Catholic Church created Islam and the Catholic Church killed 6 million Jews in the Holocaust. And I am a former member of a ministry that is under attack by the federal government because they speak out against the Catholic Church and the Jesuits. And I have had a conversation with a federal agent because of it.
Funky. So let's talk about specifically what you said you were going to call in about, which is that this one verse is responsible for Catholics doing bad things in history. Which bad things are you talking about, and how does this verse relate to them?
The Jesuits overthrew Jacobo Arbenz out of Guatemala in 1954 with the help of the CIA and E. Howard Hunt of the CIA.
You haven't answered the question. What does that one verse have to do with anything?
That's the Vatican. Revelation 17:5 is the city sitting on seven hills. That's Rome right there. And it was the Romans that killed Jesus, not the Jews.
But 17:5 is about somebody
reading the revolution.
If I remember correctly, isn't that right? It's about somebody having something written on their forehead that calls them like the mother of harlots or something like that. Mm-hmm. So like, what does that have to do with, like, say, for example, the Crusades, which was something horrible that the Catholic Church did?
They're awful. The Catholic Church killed 75,000 people in El Salvador, too.
But what does the thing that you talked about have to do with it?
It's all connected, man. They control the intelligence. There was a Catholic.
We're giving you one last chance to tell us how it's connected. What exactly are you talking about, and why does it matter?
It all can be traced back to the Roman Catholic Church. Why?
Charles, what does that have to do with our show today? Hello? We're not defending the Catholic Church here. We're not on this show defending the Catholic Church. So why do you call in attacking the Catholic Church with all of this? What does that have to do with this show today?
The Bible says, have no fellowship with the unfruitful works of darkness, but rather reprove them. You should be speaking out against them too. It's a horrible organization. That's something you and I have in common, that we both don't like the Roman Catholic Church. I'm an old school Protestant. God is working through me to speak against this corruption, man. And I may not be
a Protestant.
The feds know who I am. Yes.
Are you a Protestant? So you believe in God?
Yes, sir, I do. I said I'm a theist to the screener.
Okay, but why do you believe
in the Holy Spirit?
Let's talk about that. Let's leave the Catholic Church alone for a minute. Let's talk about why you believe in God. What evidence do you have for the God?
Oh, man. I've been in the Holy Spirit I've seen lights on the ground at night. I have video of a light that came down and visited me in November of 2021 in Corpus Christi. I use my disagreements with the Catholic Church to hopefully help prove the existence of God to people. All this stuff is connected throughout history. The restoration of Israel in 1948.
So, wait a minute.
You've seen
wait
some
a minute.
Cool lights. You've seen some cool looking lights, Charles. What's more likely, that literally like something magical outside the scope of space and time, some supernatural being that controls the universe, that all that exists, or that maybe you saw some cool lights and maybe it was a plane, maybe there was a flashlight somebody had on, maybe there was some weird thing that you didn't recognize, just like maybe you made a mistake.
There's nothing that can be.
How do lights on the ground at night prove the existence of God? I don't see the connection.
Well, one thing, there's no scientific explanation for it. There weren't any.
So therefore, it must be God.
Lights you're talking about,
right? It's magic.
So it must be God. But it could be. It could be. Can you prove it's not? Can you prove it wasn't the word?
Can you prove it's not aliens?
I'm not making the claim that it was.
What if the Martians came
here? You sound a little bit unhinged there, bro.
The Jesuits.
What if it was the Martians?
Jesuits ordered the assassination of Abraham Lincoln.
I'm asking, what if the Martians were here putting lights on the ground? How can you prove that's not what it is?
God, I didn't see any Martians.
You didn't see any gods.
God. Did you see God?
Did you see God?
But you said,
what if you have faith
Martians?
In the Martians, bro?
Yeah.
The Jesuits overthrew Salvador Allende.
All right. And we're done with Charles. Have a good day, Charles. It sounds like you have exactly one track on that record, and it's
Charles
not one
came
that we
in
want to hear anymore.
Pounding three or four Red Bulls, I think. I don't know.
Charles was really excited to say some crazy shit.
He was,
oh, my goodness.
Woo!
What a fun way to start the show.
There we go.
While we're here, by the way, if you like what we do and you want to support us, we're going to knock this out early here. If you like what we do and you want to support us, here's a couple of ways you can support the Atheist Experience and the ACA. You can actually become a member of this channel for as little as 99 cents a month. You just click the join button down below the video, and that'll give you access to all sorts of special chat emojis, which you can see people use in the chat at this very moment. How exciting is that? The Atheist Experience is also just one of the many shows that are put on by the ACA. So make sure to check out, you know, all those other shows as well. We've got sexuality. I can't do it, man. Secular sexuality.
Yes,
I was trying
can.
To say sexual sexuality.
Yes, you can.
That's so weird. We've got secular sexuality, which is on Thursday starting at 7 p.m. Central. Central Standard Time is the best standard time. We've got Truth Wanted, which airs on Fridays at 7 p.m. We also have the Sunday shows, which are many. We've got Talk Heathen. We've got the Nonprofits right before this one at 3. And also, you can always support us on Patreon. You can find that easily at tiny.cc/Patreon AXP. All one word there. With that, yeah, you were talking about your Southern drawl before we got started.
Yes, I was.
Coming out on me.
Yeah.
Oh, man. We're going to go ahead and jump over to the next caller. We've got a bunch of really cool ones this week that I really genuinely want to get to. So I'm going to try to go as fast as I can. I'm going to go right over here to line number two. We've got David, pronouns are he, him, calling in from Australia, who says that he believes in the Christian God because he has no choice. David, can you hear us?
Hi, guys. How you doing?
I'm awesome, man. How are you?
Hey, I'm from Australia, and it's really early in the morning, so...
We appreciate you getting up so early to talk to us.
How you doing?
So what did you want to talk to us about today? You said you believe in God because you have no choice. What does that mean?
Well, if I was asked a couple of years ago, I would have said that God was all-knowing, all-love, all-powerful, and just... and if I was a good boy and took the Holy Spirit in my heart, that I would go to heaven. But a couple of years ago, I lost my dad. I went up to the hospital and let him know that I had a Lutheran pastor on his way to give him some comfort and maybe give him his last communion. And after 40-odd years of him going to church, he said, I've never believed in any of this stuff, which blew my mind. So I had a bit of a think about it. And I've also been battling with this whole Hitler in heaven conundrum. I'm guessing you know all about that.
I've heard some things that he was a Catholic and therefore he must be in heaven or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Like deep inside the Fuhrer bunker, he got down on his hands and knees and begged God for forgiveness and took the Holy Spirit into his heart.
Abraham shot him
and now he's in heaven.
Right.
That's really bugged me for a long time.
There's a trend like that on TikTok right now. People talking about Jeffrey Dahmer because there's a new Jeffrey Dahmer show out and everyone's talking about Jeffrey Dahmer died a Christian. Therefore, he's our brother in Christ and we should all be happy for him. And it's like, all right.
Yeah, well, good on him.
Right.
Good on him.
So back to your statement in the queue, you believe in the Christian God because you have no choice. What does that mean to you? You have no choice but to believe in the Christian God.
Well, now, after searching, I actually found Hemant Mehta on YouTube, and I've been through every single book from Gen 1 to, I think it's 23 numbers or something, I didn't realize all my time in the church, I didn't know that there was a genocide and people sacrificing thousands of animals. And I was never told any of that. We, even in Bible study, we'd only cherry pick verses. And if I any ask any questions, I say, don't worry about it. Well, just let's go to the passages that we're reading at the moment. So I'm kind of in a place now where I think I've been like totally brainwashed. But I still believe in hell, and I'm just absolutely terrified of it.
Yeah, well, that's a really, really common thing to talk about. Everything you're saying here is unbelievably common.
I didn't think I was that common, but anyway.
Yeah, you're fine. It's
for a couple of... Because I've been going on.
It seems there's a little bit of a delay that's catching us up. I'll just say that what you're saying here is really, really, really common. We get this a lot when people talk about, like, they have they've had this religion for so long, and now they're finally starting to question it and ask, but like they've been had this fear of hell built in them for so long that, like you said, they've never actually read these different parts of the Bible that are truly genuinely horrific. There's all manner of rape and genocide and murder and torture and injustice and complete insanity from cover to cover in the book, but you don't ever learn about those things. You just learn about the cushy, nice, feel-good parts that get you in there, and then they skim over the rest. And it depends, honestly, on where you're learning it from. You know, if you're in Australia, being raised there in Christianity, you learned all about heaven and all about the forgiveness and the love, and your preacher was probably somebody who was very worldly and compassionate and maybe kind of used some lingo that the kids were using nowadays. Whereas if, you know, you're in some impoverished country somewhere else in the world that the church is currently trying to colonize, every bit of hellfire and brimstone and murder and torture is heaped upon you to make sure that you are brought in with the same fear that's keeping you in right now. It's just a different tactic on which direction or which order they give you these things. But I think you should be buoyed up by the fact that there's, you know, countless atheists who have gone through the exact same thing that you're going through at this moment, just coming to terms with the fact that this is something that you've never really had to think about very hard. And the second that you do, you realize it's horrific. And now you're having to fight not only, you know, the fact that you're intelligent and you're able to kind of pick this apart and say, like, okay, obviously these things don't make sense. And even if I accept that these things are real, I don't know if I want to be a part of it. That's the thing. Even if you could prove to me that God is real, I don't want anything to do with that guy. He sounds like a monster. But also you're having to deal with the indoctrination side of it, where you've been taught your whole life that it's a bad thing to not believe, and you will be punished if you don't believe. And I'm here to tell you, you have a massive community of support behind you at this point in your life, of people who have been exactly where you are and can surely tell you that it gets easier and easier the farther you go along.
I can remember the first time I heard the word atheist, I asked my pastor what was an atheist, and his examples were Charles Manson and Ted Bundy. And I thought, God, I hope I never met an atheist.
Well, actually, Ted Bundy supposedly in heaven, too, because he repented famously and prayed with Charles, James Dobson, and repented at the end of his life. And he's famously in heaven as well, if you believe in that doctrine of repentance. So you've let go of your faith, David, but you feel like you still have the remnants of the fear of hell and things like that. Is that what you were saying?
Like I said, it's not really even Pascal's wager. It's like a lack of free will, if you know what I mean.
At
the moment, I either believe or I go to hell. There is no free will in that sentence.
Right. So you're absolutely correct as far as that's concerned, because it's the same thing. You know, it's you're calling it a choice, and one of the choices is to be tortured for eternity. It's not much of a choice, is it? But of course, you know, the obvious question is
not much of a
choice. Why don't you feel that same fear about any other religion? Like there's countless other, you know, the Islam, for example, has a very definite hell for non-believers, and you're definitely not Muslim. So like, what's going on there? Why aren't you afraid of that? How many nights of sleep do you lose over the Muslim hell that you're not, you know, potentially going to be a part of?
Yeah, well, you don't even think about that, do you? When you're sort of so indoctrinated against one particular religion that all the others are just ludicrous.
And, exactly. And so, like, that's something that I hope you can
watch Hammond kind of, and I watch you guys.
You can apply that same kind of thinking to where you're at now. It's the same thing as if it was something didn't believe in. If I talk to you about, you know, pick a hell in throughout all the mythologies out there, you know, if I warned you about Tartarus, you'd probably laugh at me. But like, there were people that were concerned about it at one point or another. And so like, now as you're, you know, kind of critically evaluating this, and learning that, you know, not only is there no reason to believe in this God, but also there's absolutely no reason to worship it, even if it was real, then I think the next step, and I hope it's one that comes to you quickly, would be just if this hell exists, then the thing that controls it is a monster. There's no reason. And also, if God is all knowing and all powerful and can see inside your brain and knows your heart and all these things, do you really think you're going to pull one over on him? You think you're going to be the guy who bullshits him enough and says like, well, I technically believed and it kind of works, you know?
Hedge so my bet.
I say go all in. If you're going to do it halfway, do it all the way, because God says in the Bible, if you're lukewarm, I'll spew you from my mouth, and you have to be fervent and fiery and all this stuff. So if you're already at the doubting phase and the criticism phase, you've already lost the battle. Why not say F you and just be done with it and start comparing this hell to all the other hells that you're not afraid of?
I've watched a couple of debates, well, so-called debates with these presuppositionalists, Cy Bruden, Kate, or somebody. They're almost embarrassing, actually, as far as the theist perspective goes, because they don't even, they have a starting point that they won't even move from. I think Matt debated one of those, but the guy basically just evangelized. He didn't even offer any sort of arguments whatsoever. So that was sort of eye-opening.
Well, it is. And it sounds to me like, David, you've pretty much came to the conclusion, it sounds like, that you don't believe the Christian God, and you're just concerned about what the ramifications of that are. And as Forrest was saying, it's going to get easier the further removed you are from it to let go of these fears and these concerns about the consequences of your disbelief. I mean, I've been out of it for a dozen years now. I don't think about hell one second. I don't worry about hell. I don't worry about a God coming to get me. I don't worry about a boogeyman. I don't worry about a devil. None of that shit makes any difference to me. We talk about these things on these shows because so many people are still struggling with it, but I don't struggle with it. And I think the further removed from you, from this that you get, you're going to be better and better, David. You're going to have less concern for the fear of hell. You're going to have less concern for God getting you in any way. And it just, you're going to see that it doesn't make sense on any level. So good for you for letting go of this stuff. And I think that you'll find that a year from now, 2 years from now, you'll be better off.
Absolutely. I second every bit of that. Like you're doing an amazing job already.
What's that? I have a degree in herpetology, which you should know what that is.
Yeah. You're studying reptiles and amphibians. That's huge.
I'd love to have talked to Matt about snakes. I love snakes.
They're wonderful.
They're the most beautiful creatures on the planet. So I got such a bad rep. That's such a bad rep in the
seriously park. Exactly. During my first biology degree, anyway, I worked in an animal sanctuary and I took care of a bunch of snakes, and like, so many people are convinced that they're all slimy and they're all vicious and they're these crazy things that are going to chase you around the room, and it's because of that kind of teaching. They're wonderful creatures. They're hugely important for their environments.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much, Dave.
10 deadliest snakes in Australia. So cheers, guys. You have a good one, hey?
Thanks for calling,
thanks
buddy.
So much, Dave.
Okay, take care.
You're unbelievably pleasant to speak to. Thank you so much for calling in.
Nice guy.
Super nice guy. Hey, really quick, while we're kind of here in between callers, I got to tell, like, just anybody who will listen, that we have a brand new store here at the ACA, and it's really cool, and you should check it out. You can visit tiny.cc/merch ACA and get your favorite items like t-shirts and hoodies and coffee mugs, and you can even check out brand new items like beanies and cell phone cases and tote bags. You can put that logo on everything that you wear around the day-to-day, and you can be the biggest super mega fan that the world's ever seen. No one will think that's weird at all. It'll be awesome. And we even now have special limited edition items that come out every single month. So be sure to check our store regularly and check all the other stores for all the other shows as well. Right below the chat, you'll also notice that there is a donate now button, and the donations that you make there mean that the ACA gets 100% of the proceeds. So it's just like buying something from the store, but you don't get the thing. We just get all the money. So arguably it's better from everybody because we get all the money and you don't have to deal with having a t-shirt laying around. You know, who doesn't want that? So use the donate button. That's really helpful. YouTube doesn't take a cut of that. It's the best way to support the ACA. And finally, we want to send a big thank you to the crew who put this show together every week. I would love to see like a crew cam shot come up on the screen because they're just there. They are. Woo-hoo. Look at those beautiful people. Oh, I love them all. And with that, I do want to get back to other calls. We've got, again, I can't tell you how many amazing people we have calling. I'm genuinely excited. Looks like there's a couple of them here that I really want, but this one in particular looks really interesting. It's Luke from California. Pronouns are he, him, talking about the ontological argument, called before as an atheist and is now a theist. So this is an interesting conversion story, and I'm hoping you're going to tell us why. Luke, how are you today?
Hey, I'm doing great, Forrest.
Awesome. So you were talking about the modal of the ontological argument, and you're saying that you are now a theist. Could you elaborate on that just a little bit?
Okay, I will elaborate on that part because it is, very interesting. So when I called, I was an atheist, and I was actually going to call about non-theistic religions, like, you know, the idea of having religion without belief in God. But gradually I became something of a deist because I was looking at, you know, things like laws of logic and like ordering the universe. And then, you know, like a weird way, I kind of like saw myself as a deist because also I was introduced to the concept that, you know, like, you know, people will say like there's a source behind the laws of logic and stuff and they just call it God. And I was like, well, okay, if they're just going to call it God, then I guess I can say I believe in God. And then eventually I came to find this argument, which I think is like one of the best arguments I've heard. And I was just going to present it because I think it's a good argument and I want to see your thoughts on it. So, yeah.
Sure.
Yeah.
Okay. So I'll just lay it out. Mm-hmm. So premise one is that it is possible that God exists. And then premise two is that if it is possible that God exists, then God exists in some possible worlds. And then premise three says that if God exists in some possible worlds, then God exists in all possible worlds. And then the fourth premise says that if God exists in all possible worlds, then God exists in the actual world. And the fifth one is that if God exists in the actual world, then God exists. Now, I could elaborate on like how certain things are defined if you'd like.
Right. I don't think it's super necessary.
You know? No, I think that broke down between one and two.
That was really, went poorly.
I think
fast.
You made a great leap there from point one to point two to say that it's possible that God exists. And then repeat your second point.
Yeah, part was that he exists in all possible, or he exists in some possible worlds out there.
Well,
and then point three was therefore he exists in all possible worlds. Is that right?
Yes. And I could explain why.
So that's two massive leaps from one to the next. And then by the time you get to the end of it, it's contradictory to the beginning of it, and it makes no sense anymore. Dave, do you want to start or should I?
Well, I'll jump in because I think you can probably handle it better than me as far as the whole part of it. But to me, it makes no sense to start out saying it's possible that God exists. Yeah, we can all agree on that. What we're looking for on this show and anywhere in life is show me some evidence of that. I used to be a believer, and now I'm an atheist because I've come to the conclusion that there's not evidence to show that a God exists. There's no evidence to say to show that he's involved in the world around us. So when you leap from it's possible that a God exists to saying that it's possible then that he exists in some world, and then you jump into it's possible he exists in our world, you're just still stating a bunch of it's possibles. And there's still no sense in that of any kind of evidence or any kind of rational, logical point to make there. You're just saying a bunch of stuff is possible. And if you're basing your belief on that, then you're just basically saying, I mean, I could say it's possible that there are spaceships with aliens in them that come into my backyard every night. I just haven't seen one yet, but one of these days I will, and they'll take me for a ride. And no one can disprove that because, yeah, it's possible, but I'm not going to base any kind of faith or lifestyle choice on some random possibilities like that. It sounds like that's what you've done.
Yeah, very similar. The first problem with this argument is that you can replace the word God with absolutely anything and it still makes no sense. So
it's
like
possible.
It's lots of things are possible. It's possible that lightning will strike at just the right angle that it jumps into my pocket and charges my phone. That is a possible thing that could actually happen. It's not going to happen. It's possible that I'm going to win the lottery. It's not going to happen. And that's much more likely than the phone thing, but like it's a statistical zero. So to say that something is possible and then to say, therefore, we can draw these conclusions about it really makes no sense. Also, when you jump into this whole multiverse theory of, well, there has to be a reality out there with it, this very quickly, very, very often when people talk about multiple universes, multiple realities and things like that, it's right there on that line between maybe we're talking about physics and maybe we're in some Deepak Chopra level woo-woo nonsense, right? Where somebody picked up the first page of this textbook and was like, now I know everything. And so, yeah. You know, there's that old Whitest Kids You Know sketch of there is a reality out there with the exact timeline of American history, but everybody's a cat. It's all run by kittens. That's a reality out there. But do you believe that? Just because we have, you know, maybe infinite universes, maybe with infinite possibilities, and maybe blah, blah, blah. So it doesn't really stick when you do it with anything else. If you talk about the Easter Bunny as possible, therefore it is, doesn't work.
So I'd like to
hear
from you.
And then finally, the third thing.
Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, sorry. I'm just going to wrap up really quickly.
Okay.
The third thing, finally, is that the order of your premises there from beginning to end has a myriad of issues. Saying that God could possibly exist in some realities, okay, why not? We'll make that leap for fun. Therefore, he must, because I'm guessing he has superpowers, and if he exists somewhere, he exists everywhere. That's a big thing you have to verify. And then also, when you got to the end, you said, therefore, he does exist in all realities. That screws up the first half, where it says he exists in some of them. And if he exists in some of them, then he must exist in all of them. That makes no sense. So, like, yeah, there's a...
Well, I could clear some stuff up if you'd like.
Yeah, respond to our responses, if you would. Go ahead and clear some things up.
Yeah, okay. So, I see what you guys are saying now. So, in this argument, God is defined as, like, a maximally great being, right? So, like, you know, tri-omni... And that would also mean if he is maximally great, that he has to exist and he's necessary. So if you take something like 2 + 2 = 4, that is something that possibly exists, but also it necessarily exists. In any world that follows the laws of logic, you would have to have 2 + 2 = 4. So really, all you need for this argument to work is for the possibility of God, because all the other ones in academia really aren't disputed because they do logically follow. Now, the argument isn't super convincing, and I completely agree with that, and even theists agree, but the argument itself, you know, is really valid. And really, you have to attack the first premise to attack the rest of it. I'm not a logician or philosopher, but, you know, that's like some stuff I've heard.
So this, what this reminds me a lot of is, like, there was the whole Thomas Aquinas. I think it was the teleological argument that he did, which was, I can think of perfection. I have a concept of what perfection is. And in order for me to understand perfection, there must be something that is actually legitimately perfect. And the only thing that could be perfect is God. And he was basically referring to this, like, this Plato's rule of the idea of forms, right? The perfect form of a chair and the perfect existence of a tree and all these things for which everything in reality is just a mere reflection. And it's sort of this weird bridge to that. And honestly, no, just no. That just because something is possible doesn't mean that it is a thing. And if you extend that to say, well, no, it's special in this case, because we're talking about something that has to be super powerful, and the tri-omni, as you said, which that in itself is a logical contradiction there, to have something that is omni, all these things, but whatever. If something is going to exist and it has to be this, and therefore if it's possible, it must be, you're making several massive leaps of logic and faith to be able to connect those dots. You're not applying the same rules as you would to anything else. It is, by definition, a special pleading fallacy for saying, yes, I know this makes no sense at any other time, but because this thing has superpowers, therefore the rules must be different. It's you know, it doesn't really hold up.
Well, it's not necessarily that God has, like, superpowers, so to speak, because in that sense...
I use the term colloquially. You know, I'm just using it to downplay all these omnis.
Yeah, that's all right. So, like, you know, the maximal greatness would mean that, you know, God would have all the great properties, you know, and all that. So, like, but when I say God is necessary, I'm not, like, doing it to say, like, it's a special instance where it's only God, because, like, like I said earlier, you know, certain mathematical equations exist, you know, and certain things also can't exist, like square circles or a triangle with four sides. So when I say God is, like, possible to exist, like, I'm not the one who made the argument. It was formulated by Alvin Plantinga. And I think I get some of your points, but really, like, the premises, like, they do follow logically, because, like, I could put in, like, okay, I'll do the argument, but I'll put in, like, 2 + 2 = 4. So, like, you know, if 2 + 2 = 4 is possible, like, if that's possible, then it's possible in some possible worlds, right? Like, 2 + 2 = 4 in some possible worlds. But if it was 2 + 2 = 4 in some possible worlds, which follow the laws of logic, then all possible worlds that follow the laws of logic would also have to have 2 + 2 = 4. And I just want to say that this argument doesn't prove that God exists as well. It's more like an inference to the best explanation. And I understand if you have objections,
You have to understand that, like, when you're talking about this, and I realize this is pedantic, and I apologize. I'll get off it quickly, but, like, you have to understand when you're talking about, you know, other realities that have different laws of logic and all these things, like, we are making extreme hypothetical statements here. And so to say that you're going to base your belief in this reality on the potential possible rules of other realities, you realize how that's kind of it's an issue, right? Like, that's going to lead you down some weird roads. And furthermore, like we said a minute ago, you can't apply this to anything else, no matter what's going on with it. You know, if I said exactly every single thing, word for word, that you said this call, but I replaced the word God with the tooth fairy, that it must be omnipotent and all these things, because it can be in all these different beds at once to pick up teeth and all these, it has all these amazing, it's outside the space, what every single thing that you've talked about this way, like, it wouldn't make sense to you, and it wouldn't hold up, and you wouldn't be talking about any of this stuff. See what I mean?
Well, okay. So when you talk about the tooth fairy, is that like a title for like some all-powerful thing, or is it like physical? Because one response I've heard to that is,
pick one. Really, it doesn't matter. Like, the tooth fairy must be all-powerful. It's able to be in all these different bedrooms around the world collecting teeth from under people's pillows. And surely there's alien teeth that it's collecting as well. And like, it doesn't matter. It just, if I apply that to whatever I want, it doesn't matter what logical leaps I make. It doesn't matter what qualifications I give this thing. It doesn't matter how I describe this thing. It's still the freaking tooth fairy, and we can all agree that's silly, and there's no reason to believe in it, right?
Well, the tooth fairy is silly, and I don't believe in it, but also there is one crucial difference, which is that God is not a physical being, but the tooth fairy being a physical being couldn't be maximally great, because we know that, like, you know, at one point,
the tooth fairy
isn't either.
Again, you're special pleading, Luke. Why does God get to not be physical and the tooth fairy is? What if Forrest says, the tooth fairy is not. He's not physical. Yeah,
The tooth fairy isn't physical. The tooth fairy is omniscient. Too. The tooth fairy is an omniscient being that exists everywhere, that can remove teeth at will. It's a magical thing. It's not physical. Does it make sense now? I don't think so.
Well, I suppose if you defined the tooth fairy as the same way you define God and you called it a tooth fairy, then I guess the argument could work, but you would just be like switching the title, you know? Something like that.
And that's exactly the point we're making, is that the argument doesn't work in either direction.
It doesn't work at all.
If you're calling in to tell us that there is a way we can convince you that the tooth fairy is real other than actual evidence, then there's an issue. You understand? Because that's the thing. If you want to convince us of a God, all we need is evidence. We don't need a logical, you know, runaround. All we need is evidence. If you give us evidence of it, we're solid. We can all agree on that.
This argument that it's possible and therefore must be is not anything close to evidence, Luke. Any more than it's close to evidence for an invisible tooth fairy. And so it's just something that you've decided you want to believe. And I don't know how you've allowed that to take you from being an atheist to a theist, but you have. And it's pretty shaky, to be honest with you.
Well, it's not the only thing. And also, I just want to comment, by evidence, do you mean like empirical verification?
The same evidence you require for literally anything else.
Something, yes. Anything other than it could be.
Well, okay. But the thing is, for God, you don't need something to like be empirically like shown for God to exist, because
what do you need?
Don't need empiricism. Well, you just need like philosophical and like metaphysical arguments like this one.
Faith.
And really
faith.
Like,
yeah, faith.
You just need faith. That's what you're saying.
Faith. Like the thing that
faith. Well, faith is the substance of things hoped for, the evidence of things not seen. Faith is the evidence that Christians have for the belief in a God. There is no other evidence. And when we ask you for it, you keep going around the circle of your premises of it could be. And when we give you that example of a tooth fairy could be, you reject that because the tooth fairy is not invisible. Yeah, it kind of is. Nobody's ever seen one. Mm-hmm. So you've got the same argument. Go ahead.
When you look at like Plantinga's argument, like all you need for everything to logically follow is the possibility that God exists. Like logically speaking, that is all you need.
Okay. And it's all right you need. I need more. It may be all you need, Luke, but I need more. So
pick literally anything else.
I think we've worn this one out. So we probably need to move on, because I think we're just going to go in circles on this. If that's all you need for you're for you to believe in a God and be a theist, then good on you. I need more than that, because the claims that this God makes and the things that are happening in the name of this God in this world are not okay. And so I need more than that for me to sign up for that.
Gotcha.
If, you, just if really you're quick okay with we, that, then we, you go with it.
Really quick before we wrap this up, Luke, would you believe in literally any other thing using the exact methodology that you gave us in the skull? Would you believe in the Big Bang? Would you believe in the life and times of George Washington based on this? Would you believe in evolution based on this? Would you believe in plate tectonics based on this? Anything else? Would you believe based on this logic?
Not based on this argument. I believe on those for other reasons.
Exactly. That's precisely.
You're giving God a pass here, and
you're
I'm
making
not okay
special
with that.
Rules for something that you would never use for anything else, and that is the problem. And with that, Luke, we're going to move on to the next call. Thank you so much for calling in.
Thanks, buddy. We wore that out.
Yeah, I didn't want to say the same thing another time. But really quickly, before we jump into the next call, the ACA actually hosts several shows other than just the Atheist Experience, including the nonprofit Secular Sexuality. I said it right this time. Truth Wanted, Talk Heathen. And if you didn't catch those shows last week, here's a quick taste of the things that you probably want to go back and watch.
Had one particular horror story where the couple had bought the doll and bonded to her, you know, oh, we love her, you know, Kara. Or, you know, not Kara, I'll use another name.
Okay.
If we had an election tomorrow, the current government would be pretty much obliterated. So we are kind of shifting back to the middle by the
way. Well, we're a world-class exporter of crazy, you know, like we're very good at that. I'm not surprised.
Does the arrival of the heifers in Israel set in motion the coming of the Messiah or the return of Jesus as Christians believe?
Do you mind if I try to answer that, Scott? Let me just check my notes here real quick. No, you, a professing Christian with a repentant heart, Thomas, still sin, and since all sins are the same in the eyes of God, and it sounds like all of that is what you would affectionately call bull.
I don't know how you got this so wrong, but you are now on mute.
You're just saying
and you know who's not saying to me anymore? You.
Hey, if you can arrange to be in the Austin area between October 27th and October 30th, consider joining us in the studio audience at the ACA Free Thought Library for live broadcasts of Secular Sexuality, Truth Wanted, Halloween Special, Talk Heathen, and The Atheist Experience. Doors open at 6 p.m. on Thursday and Friday and on noon on Sunday. Parking is where you can find a legal spot after the lot is full, so be there early to make sure you get in easily. And if you can't make it there this month, we will continue to broadcast live from the library in the last week of every month. So keep watching this show and our website, which is atheist-community.org, for news and information as we extend our in-studio offerings into the future. It's going to be exciting. All right.
So
Dave,
many
are you ready
good
to
calls.
Move on?
Yes.
Dude, this has been a phenomenal show. Are you ready to move on?
Yes, let's do.
Okay, so I've got... I'm really torn right now because holy crap, like we have so many good people in the queue here, but I actually really want to do this one. This one is, let's see here. They actually didn't give a name. The name is Believer in God. Pronouns are he, him from Washington State. And Believer in God wants to know, are atheists actually atheists? Are they being truthful about that? Can I call you Believer or should I, is there something else I can call you?
Hey, yeah, Believer's fine.
Cool. All right, Believer, you're asking, are we actually atheists? Would you like to elaborate on that at all?
Sure. So do you know, like when you kind of see, let's say someone dye their hair this interesting color or something, and you know, they're kind of being edgy or a teenager or something. So I'm curious if that's kind of like atheist, because I was seeing a study in Finland done in 2013 and 2014, where they asked like believers and non-believer atheists on a lie detector test. And if you would have expected like the lie detector test to be truthful for the atheists, but they had much more pressure in their heart and everything. They had a methodology with this, but you would expect you wouldn't expect the results if they were truthful. I mean, this is just Finland, but yeah.
So there's a couple of things there. First of all, I understand the argument is that, you know, if I dye my hair blue, my hair is actually still brown. I just make it look like it's blue. Therefore, by calling myself an atheist, I'm actually a believer. This is just an outward facade that I'm putting on. Is that what you're saying?
Or maybe you're just like, you're like, you know, like sometimes when you're like a teenager, you kind of got it, you know.
Cool. So a couple of things. First of all, just random off the cuff thing. Polygraph tests are bullshit pseudoscience, and they're not even usually admissible in court because they detect how nervous you are and how uncomfortable you are. They don't actually detect lies. So there's a whole bunch of reading you can do there if you want. But also, I would say that even if somebody were to appear nervous when talking about God, if they say they're an atheist, it's probably because they have some trauma from religion that they are carrying with them. Like the, you know, one of the other callers that we had earlier on today, the guy from Australia, who is very convinced that this God makes no sense and certainly doesn't like the guy, just like us, you know, he's anti-theist at this point, but also is fearful of hell because that's how he's been indoctrinated since he was a child. So like, that's something that you would probably be seeing there as far as a physiological response that might look like lying. In either way, like, if somebody doesn't believe in a God, all I would say is that, you know, and this is an old phrase, I'm an atheist just as much as you are, plus one. I believe in one less God than you do. All the other gods that you don't believe in, the thousands of gods that people have believed in over the years, you know, Zeus and Thor and Odin, and you don't believe in any of the Quetzalcoatl, you don't believe in any of the Mithra, you don't believe in any of these other gods throughout all of history, throughout all of humanity, but you do believe in this one. I don't believe in that one either. So exactly how you feel about all those other gods is how I feel about yours. And that doesn't make me a liar. It just makes me consistent. Does that make sense to you?
Yeah, it makes sense.
Cool.
What believer, what motivation would I have as an atheist to not be truthful about my atheism? Or are you saying that I don't really know what it is I believe and don't believe? Which is it?
It completely depends on the country and your environment. If you're in, let's say,
no, I'm talking about me in this country, environment.
In the U.S.,
I'm an atheist.
I believe you're in Austin, Texas, right? So if you're, that's a pretty liberal environment. I think you would probably get more flack if you wore something as conservative than as an atheist, liberal, or something. I know these two things don't correlate, the politics and the religion completely, but I don't think, much discrimination if you were an atheist. But if you were a theist in there, but if you were, let's say, in a very rural town in Mississippi or something, possibly, yeah, if you were a theist, you would have less likeliness to lie on that one. It depends where you are. It depends what the political affiliation of the place is.
Well, are you implying that atheists are like hiding, like an atheist who lives in a small town in Mississippi, like you said, they wouldn't be truthful about their atheism out in public? Is that what you're saying? I'm not following you.
Possibly, yes. But if you are in, let's say, the where I am in Washington, I don't want to give exactly where, but it is liberal. If you... I think it's more trendy if you are kind of an atheist, or if you have dyed hair or something like this. It's, honestly speaking, it'd be easier to make friends than if you said like something, I'm a believer in God. Well, it's number one thing. Yeah.
It's not a jacket I put on.
Yeah.
My atheism is not something I wear when I go to Starbucks. It's my response to the God claim. It's not my complete identity, but in the world that we're living in now, with, especially in America, with so much of it being about Christian nationalism and faith and everything, you have to be a Christian and go to church, or you're looked upon with skepticism. I'm not an atheist because I want to be. I'm an atheist because I don't believe in the claim. I don't accept the claim that there's a God, the claim that's been made by Christianity. So it's not something I take off and put on. Now, when I go out in public, if I'm in a small town, I may not wear a sign around my neck that I'm an atheist, come and harass me, but I am who I am, and I'm not being untruthful about it. I'm just being, I use discretion about who I talk to and how I talk to them in a particular environment. So my atheism is not something I put on and take off to make it convenient for me in certain circumstances. It is my response to the God claim. It is who I am in that sense. Does that make sense to you?
I don't mean to offend you in any way, right?
I'm not offended.
Conflicted on this. Oh, sorry. Yeah, I am very conflicted on this one. I am not sure, as I am not an atheist, if atheists are being truthful or not. When I read works, I mean, there are different types of atheists too, right? Like, you can get atheists who are conservative or liberal. And I've read some of their works both ways, and I'm not sure if they're truthful. I mean, it's very hard for me to determine.
Well, let me turn that around on you. You say you're a believer in God. Are you truthful about that?
Most definitely, yes.
Well, then why wouldn't you accept that I'm truthful about mine?
My faith says that someone will have a natural inclination towards God. And even people, like, if you look at the genetically modified skeptic on YouTube, he even admits if you are born non-religious, like if you're born in a society that does not have any faith or whatever, someone is more naturally as a kid to gravitate towards theism than non-theism. They may make an argument from evolutionary theory or something that, let's say, the bush faith, there's a lion there, or, I mean, they have the, and then they'll try to merge this into, like, we have a natural belief in God, it gives us a purpose, and it will give us, like, a teamwork, and they'll have these evolutionary psychology ideas, but that is kind of what it is, right? I mean, even, I depend, but yeah, I'm going because of my faith, but I even think if you go scientifically speaking, I think the research, I'm not sure if it's 100% clear, but I believe it's clear that people are more likely to be theists than non-theists just naturally too. Like, I hear atheists say a lot, like, if you read the Bible, you'll be atheist, or if you don't, if you're not born, like, people are born atheists, but I don't think it's 100% true.
So you've talked about, you know, a couple of things that I think are really salient and they kind of blend together here. One of them is that you said that people are more, just now, you said that, you know, children are more likely to tend towards belief in God. Children are also more likely to tend towards a belief in unicorns and fairies and magic and things like this as well, because they don't have a distinction between reality and magic and, you know, imagination. So that's, yeah, that is true. Children are easily convinced of things because they trust their parents to not lie to them and to keep them safe. So when their parents say there's this thing called God, they believe it. Also because religion has a really great practice of indoctrination that teaches kids that only good people think what we think. And if you don't think this, then you're bad and you're going to be burned for all eternity in a pit of fire. And that's a good thing because you're so bad that you didn't believe this thing. So yeah, they're going to believe that for that reason as well. Also, as I just stated, they have a hard time separating, you know, fantasy from reality. So they're going to believe any fantastical fairy tale you tell them. So there is a lot of psychological things going on there. None of them are good, nor are they a good case for the existence of God. Also, you talked a minute ago, and this kind of ties in here. You talked a minute ago about, you know, how if you're living in a different area, it might be fashionable or easy to be an atheist. I live in Oklahoma. I have my whole life. There are literally double-digit churches within walking distance of my house. I've moved several times. That has always been the case, not on purpose. There are always churches everywhere. I've been an atheist pretty much my whole life as well. I was bullied as a child for being atheist. I've had people scream in my face about me being an atheist. I've had people come bang on my door and leave shit in my yard because I'm an atheist and I'm going to go to hell. I've been threatened because I'm an atheist and I'm going to go to hell. It has never been popular nor convenient for me to be an atheist where I am. And yet I am one because I just don't believe in the things that people tell me about the supernatural almighty being. Not only do I not believe that it's real, but I don't believe that it's good. Even if you could prove to me that it's real, I don't want anything to do with it. So, but also, fun fact, I did believe in ghosts for a long time, and I believed in magic for a long time, and I believed in like, you know, drawing witchcraft pentacles and circles and making good luck happen and things. I believed in that until I was like a teenager as well. So like, I believed in those things because that's the culture that I was raised in my house, and my parents told me that was real, and I didn't question it because I was a child. The exact same reasons why people grow up Christian and tend to believe those things around where I live now. You grow up in a household that has that. So everything you've said so far about why you don't think that atheists are being genuine, I'm sorry, it just doesn't hold up. All of it has a logical explanation, and every one of those logical explanations goes against believing in a God. So I don't know where exactly you can go beyond that as far as logic is concerned.
Okay, then I guess, I mean, that one is a little bit anecdotal because it is for you, but I understand.
For sure, but you're asking us if we're being serious, so I'm giving you my anecdotal response.
I mean, there are other things too. Like, for example, some people may think their intellect is higher than like a divine intellect, right? Like, if you read the Old Testament, some of the rabbis would think they're like, they would pride their intellect a lot even over like God's, right? Like, for example, they would argue with God. And even when God, let's not get into the theological aspect, but I see that today. It may not be fashionable, but I've seen a lot of different reasons. For example, people may have an arrogance. Intellect is a huge thing. If someone is smart, they may want to show their arrogance. They may want to think they're smarter than God or something. So
Arachne thought that she was a better weaver than Athena, and that's why she got turned into a spider. So we can all learn from that, right? Do you remember that story from Greek mythology? Arachne thought she was a better weaver than Athena, and so to punish her for her hubris, Athena turned her into a spider to spin and weave silk for the rest of her life. Is that a thing that we can now base our reality on? Like, is that, why do I care what it says in the Bible? Why do I care what people believe about God or whether they think they're smarter or whatever like that? If I don't think God is real and I don't think the Bible is real, what difference does it make?
But I would argue for that, we can kind of rule that one out, because like, let's say if there was a God, why would he make his faith go extinct? Why wouldn't he keep one of his faiths in the limelight, right? Like, you can argue,
if there was a God, why would 25,000 people starve to death every day? That's a real figure. 25,000 people, including over 10,000 children, starve to death every single day. That's more than 1,000 people an hour. In the time it's taken us to do this show, over 1,000 people have starved to death. If there's a God, what's up with that? We can ask these questions. It doesn't change the fact that this God does or doesn't exist, that does nothing to help us here.
But I would honestly argue, for example, I mean, I know you do not agree, but I would argue if I look at, I agree, I cannot get like a peer-reviewed type paper to prove God or anything. There's, of course not. But I think if I look at the signs of a God, I think it's pretty apparent. Like if you just look at, let's say, the Abrahamic religions on, let's say, something like homosexuality, and you look at the, let's say, monkeypox, you look at HIV, you look at the diseases that come through that, I mean, you'll hear the media say something much different than what really is going on. And what's going on, it goes with God's word, at least for the Abrahamic religions, right? So I think
you do know that HIV and monkeypox do not only affect LGBT people, right?
It does not only, but I mean, it's like 97% of people are from that, right? I mean, it's not a completely...
That's not a true figure at all. And also, if you study the very basics of epidemiology, you'll understand how self-isolating groups work. So there was a... like MRSA, for example. MRSA spreads predominantly amongst athletes. Does that mean that MRSA is an athlete's disease or a punishment for being an athlete? Or does it mean that athletes tend to be in close physical contact and share locker rooms together, and therefore there's a higher rate of spread? So even though MRSA can affect everybody, it has a significantly higher rate in athletes because they're a self-isolating group.
I don't know, honestly speaking, but I know God has cursed, for example, people who have gone to,
God is cursed? Wait a minute. How do you know God has cursed certain people? How do you know that?
I mean, I'm just seeing it in front of my eyes, and I'm even seeing like the media, who are mostly non-religious, just denying it in front of them. Like, they will give all
the
explanations.
Because somebody who isn't religious says it isn't true, that means that it must be true.
What are you seeing in front of your eyes that gives you proof that God has cursed a certain group of people or any person? What are you seeing in front of your eyes? Break it down for me.
I'm seeing disease, sure. What I am seeing is, if I look at like media or something, right, I am seeing them giving, not telling me the full picture, right?
No, what have you seen? What have you seen in front of your eyes that give you proof that God has cursed anyone?
Sure.
What have you seen?
If you go on a per capita basis for monkeypox or HIV, it is by far higher. I see his...
covered that. There are other diseases that are higher in other communities. It doesn't mean anything. Literally anybody can get monkeypox or HIV.
You've kind of gone off the rails here, believer in God, with your biases against certain people groups, and you're really very offensive in the way that you talk about certain people groups and claiming that the God that you believe in has cursed them, wherein they get sick and die. You know, I'm just going to say bullshit. That idea is bullshit, and you're full of shit for believing it. Can I be more direct than that?
I apologize if I offended any community or anything. However, I don't want to reveal exactly my faith, but it's been clear on that what it says. So, I mean, I go with my faith. I take it seriously, right? So,
Let's try this then. Any God, if there is a God, if your God is real, any God that would punish people with disease and death for loving someone is an asshole. I don't want anything to do with that God. I'm very happy that I don't have any evidence for that God. And if you could prove that that God exists right now on the show, I would admit that that God exists, and I would still say he's an asshole and I don't want anything to do with him. I would not worship your God if it was real.
So let me, oh my God. So you are saying that even if the God was real, you would still not worship him, just like the...
Yes.
Absolutely. A God absolutely, that would punish people with disease and death, and that would punish certain groups of people because of who they love. I don't want any part of that God, and I feel sorry for you that you believe in a God like that.
I would be his biggest enemy even if he was real. Absolutely. Without a doubt.
And to Forrest's point, this thousands of people who starve to death every day because this omnipresent, omnipotent, omnibenevolent God doesn't give a shit about them. If he's present, if he exists and he's present and active and able to do something to actually help people and doesn't, he's a moral monster.
Yep, absolutely.
And I want nothing to do with him.
When we look at societies that have more focused on just material goods over God's commandments, even though they may have food and everything at night, they'll suffer more from loneliness and dying alone, and they will not even get married. Even in these other countries you are mentioning that are theists, even if they die, let's say from starvation, they at least are not lonely. They have some social connections.
Oh, dear
they
God. Bonds. Yeah.
I'd rather be single than starve to death, dude.
I don't want to hear any more about your God. We got a lot of calls lined up. I think we need to move on from believing in God.
Yeah, your God sounds really gross, and the way that you're describing him is awful.
Yeah, well, nothing to do with you or your God. So here's a truthful atheist saying goodbye to you.
Have a good day, believer. Remember, everybody, this God may judge you, but his sins far outnumber your own. So who is he to judge him? All right, so we've got all sorts of cool calls on the line here, and I don't have any more announcements, so I'm just going to rush right into the next one.
We got to try to get through some of these.
Yeah, because we got like a million people calling in, and this one on top looks really cool. This is on line number 28. Diana, pronouns are she, her, from Kansas. The lack of an atheist objective moral standard, and therefore no way to absolutely condemn something as good or bad. Diana, how are you? This goes perfectly with what we were just talking about. I'm awesome. This is perfect. Because then the last call, Dave and I were excoriating the God claims because we think that any God that would run a world like this is a monster. And you're saying that we have no way of objectively claiming that that's true because we have no morality, so to speak, or moral standard. Could you please elaborate on that? Tell me if I'm missing anything because I don't want to talk over you or put words in your mouth.
Yes, I would say that there's a lack of moral framework. So inherently, I don't think that any of your claims have any weight speaking on the subject of morality.
Okay. Yeah.
That's basically it.
Could you please tell me what you mean by a moral framework? Or unless you were already going to go there.
I mean, a way to quantify moral weight of separate claims.
Okay.
Well,
so
I guess
what
maybe
is your
start with
claim?
What is your objective moral standard? Let's
start
there.
Perfect. We're on the same page. Yes.
My objective moral standard, I appeal to God.
Okay.
Is this the God of the
elaborate,
Bible?
Please. Yeah. What God and elaborate on God's morality.
I'm a Catholic.
Yeah.
I'm a Catholic.
Okay.
I'm a Catholic. Okay. I appeal to the Catholic Church in Scripture.
Can I ask you a couple of quick questions? Just very, very brief questions about Catholicism, just to make sure I know who you are. Because, like, forgive me, we get a million callers, and if somebody says they're Catholic or a Christian or whatever, that could mean a lot of things. So just to understand, do you believe that the Bible is a good rule of faith? Of morality, that what's written in the Bible is a moral framework?
Depends on specifically, I'd say that we interpret things within the light and the tradition of the church and the dogmatic teachings of the church.
The Catholic Church's interpretation of the Bible and the way that they put out the Bible, that is a moral framework that you're cool with. Is that what I'm understanding?
Yes.
Okay. Second question, do you think that the Catholic Church has always been on the right side of history? Do you think that the Catholic Church has always been a force for good? Do you think that the Catholic Church's, administrations of morality have always been in line with the moral framework that you're talking about?
I would say that every human is a sinner, and there has been people who have committed atrocities in the Catholic Church, going against church teachings, going against church dogma. So, of course, I don't agree with those things. But I think that, yes, I think that popes can speak dogmatically and infallibly, and when they do so, they are just and morally righteous.
Okay.
So, could I ask you something? Could I ask you about how the Catholic Church, how do you feel about the Catholic Church over many years of history covering up and relocating Catholic priests for molesting boys over and over and over again?
Yeah, that's a predominantly a Vatican II problem. Like, the post-Vatican II reforms really kind of screwed the church over. It's drifted into modernism. The church itself still stands, but I'd say that it was a top-down Vatican cover-up, and really the fault is in the hands of Pope Francis. So, I mean, but that's not even necessarily... So I call to pose to you this question, even if assuming that...
So you didn't want to talk about that.
Well, I can go into depth.
You don't want to talk about the immorality in the Catholic Church. Well, you call and lecture us on objective moral standards, and yet the Catholic Church, which you support and defend, has been convicted of atrocities of immorality.
Well, she herself said that different people do bad things in the church, but like we're attacking the organization as a whole, like the Crusades. Like, where was that? That was the whole church. That wasn't just one person, right?
I mean,
Those
weren't bad.
The Crusades are fine. I mean,
were they fine?
I was trying to post you.
No. Were the Crusades okay?
The fact that the Catholic Church sent people to slaughter innocent people across the Middle East with the promise of heaven if they killed as many women and children as possible, that was a good thing?
A bit of a straw man there. That's not necessarily how it was. There were evil committed by innocent.
No. If anything, I was putting that lightly.
I would say is a moral...
What? Repeat that, please.
Sorry. My call cut out, I believe. I would say that... the original Crusades and the reason that they came. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Yes, I can.
Okay, sorry. I believe that the original Crusades and the moral purpose they fulfilled were, of course, a net positive to spread God's word as far as possible.
By the sword. Just we're talking about the same. Whether or not you agree with what happened.
Sword, of course.
Spreading God's word by killing people who don't believe in it. That's what you're talking about.
Yeah, he came with a sword. Yes, I'm to the book.
Okay.
Right away,
Diana.
And you're talking to us about moral standards. Oh,
that,
my
that's
God.
Exactly what I'm saying.
The irony of Diana.
How is it a moral negative? You tell me. You tell me.
To kill people for not believing the way you believe is moral?
Is insane. It's monstrous.
Diana.
I don't care what your moral standard is for
Diana.
Me. I have no interest in your judgments on me. If you think that it's okay to murder somebody.
I don't like logical contradictions. Can I speak? I don't like logical contradictions. I have constructed my entire worldview in an attempt to free myself from any logical contradictions. It's always been, I consumed atheist media for years. I loved Matt Dillahunty, Aaron Raw, all of the Alex O'Connor, all of them. Yes, I consumed all of that, but then I realized that there were so many dang contradictions. And I have one question that I really haven't gotten very many good answers from.
Okay, so what's your question?
Assuming that God is false from the atheist perspective, what is wrong with following a coherent Christian morality for society? It seems to have done us great in the past. It seems to have led to order and led to moral accountability.
Wow. You're presenting us with a consistent moral standard and it's okay.
Yeah, no, you actually answered your own question.
That?
You answered your own question in this call, Diana. You want to know what's wrong with following this morality that you've given us, even if there isn't a God? Because it leads people to believe what you just said, that it's okay to slaughter innocent men, women, and children if they don't believe what you believe. That's a horrible, evil thing to say. Shame on you.
That is such a straw man if I've ever heard it. But what about
that's what you just said?
You said
the Crusades were okay because those
what
people didn't believe and it spread the word by the sword.
Okay.
That's hideous.
Are you okay?
Also, what is
would you go down the street in your neighborhood and slaughter the people who don't believe according to your beliefs? Would that be okay?
No. Do you understand the history? Behind the Crusades, we have no need for that now.
What context at all? No, absolutely no. What context is it okay? What context is it okay to murder somebody because they don't believe in something? What's the context that makes that okay? Women and children were killed, not soldiers.
Diana.
Children were murdered by the thousands. What makes that okay? What's the context that makes it okay to slaughter children?
Source? Okay. But you still
literally
have
history 101. Kind of go to college and learn. Like, it's not a controversial statement.
But what about our moral plagues that we see right now in society? Like, look at the way we're drifting. Don't you
no.
see that there's some
No, we're not going to talk about that. You're going to answer that question. No,
Diana.
We are not moving on until you answer that question.
I said the Crusades.
No, you didn't.
I said
what is the exact context that makes it okay to slaughter children for not being Christian?
There is no, I wouldn't say that that's a moral.
Then the Crusades were.
I don't agree with slaughtering children. No.
But that's what happened in the Crusades.
That is what happened.
No, I would say that the intention of the Crusades, I'm not talking about the actual slaughter.
What is the exact context that makes it okay to kill anybody because they don't believe what you believe? Anybody at all?
If they're shutting down your church or infringing upon your beliefs or threatening your life,
that's not what we're talking about. We're talking about just not believing what you believe. That's what you said. You said it's okay to spread the word by the sword. That we're not talking about somebody taking away your church, your rights, or anything. What is the context for killing somebody for not believing what you believe, spreading the word by the sword? What is the context in which that is okay?
I've already given you my answer to that. Do you just brush over things like that?
Tell me right now. Tell me right now.
Circling that I dread. I dread this type of circling.
Nope.
Okay.
We're not moving on for anything until you answer this question directly.
I'm going.
When is it okay to kill somebody?
I'm answering the question directly.
Tell me. What's the question? What's the context?
I already told you.
Then clearly I've missed it. Tell me again. When is it okay to kill somebody because they don't believe what you believe?
Infringing upon your rights.
And we already said that's not what we're talking about.
Infringing upon your life.
That's not what we're talking about.
So you're shifting
it? You said it's okay.
Yes, I don't agree that in other contexts they're right.
Spread the word by the sword. That's not a defense.
If necessary.
Spreading the word by the sword is not defending yourself. Not defending your faith. It's not defending your rights. Oh. It's spreading the word.
Diana. Yes. Why were the Crusades necessary?
They were to defend the faith, to defend the church, to defend because of the infringement upon from the East. This was a response to something. This was a historical response to something. There were events that necessitated this response. Now, do I think everything that the Crusaders did were justified? Obviously not. I disagree with like the brutal slaughter of the Gnostics and stuff. I think that a lot of the ways that they perpetuated things were unjust and incredibly cruel. I think a lot of the orderings had for the Crusades and their actions had incredibly malicious intent and were horrible and would be frowned upon by God. I think that that's true. Like, I'm not saying that we should just go and kill everyone. Like, don't put words in my mouth here. Have a little bit of understanding here.
You're just saying we should kill certain people. Not everyone, but certain people.
Only a few.
You're saying that it's necessary to spread... No. You're saying that it's necessary to spread the word of God and the faith by the sword. Am I correct that you said that?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. That's all we need to know. That's all we need to know about your morality.
That's evil. That's absolutely despicable.
How do you know it's evil? Well, how do you know evil?
Because it resulted in the unjust killing of human beings, period. Here's the massacre at Ayodhya. The massacre at Ayodhya on the 20th of August in 1191 during the Third Crusade, when King Richard had more than 2,000 Muslim prisoners of war beheaded in front of their city. They were prisoners of war. People who were captured and powerless had 2,000 people beheaded.
Okay.
Is that moral?
Yes.
Yeah,
that's
you're done.
Where's your friend?
Absolutely, absolutely disgusting.
Diana.
We're done.
I feel
absolutely
sorry for that woman.
Shame on you.
Oh my God. Just the indoctrination that she lives with to believe that.
Unbelievably gross.
Unbelievable. Poor woman. Poor woman.
Yeah,
I feel sorry for anyone in her world.
Yeah, I'm not going to take the cold questions about like where our morality comes from, because I have this whole saying that you shouldn't take advice from somebody that you wouldn't take criticism from. So like, I'm sorry. I'm not interested. If you think it's okay to murder over 2,000 people who are defenseless because they don't believe your thing and because, they were against your beliefs, they were against your church. Absolutely no.
We're running out of time and got too many calls. Let's grab Ruben.
I was looking at that 24. One too. So here we've got number 24. Have you already put him on there? Here, let me do it.
No.
We've got Ruben, who is an agnostic, calling in from Texas. Pronouns are he, him. Ruben, how are you doing today?
I'm doing just fine. How are you?
Hey, Ruben.
We're awesome. So what exactly do you want to talk about today, Ruben?
So as I put on my topic or question, the issues with atheism and their objection to all what happened in the Old Testament, they use presentism to attack all those things that happened.
Explain.
That's a fallacy. Using presentism to judge all the people that what they did back then is a fallacy, is what I'm trying to get my point across.
Okay, please elaborate on what you're referring to with presentism.
Yeah, I'm lost there.
Well,
help us with that.
Well, I mean, the biggest issue this country faced, United States, I'm gonna bring up slavery. Slavery back then, 2,000 years ago, nobody was having topics on how bad it was. Time passed, and that discussion started happening. The same thing happened. Is happening with abortion today. Do you see where I'm getting at?
No, I'm not sure following. You're saying that the back in the day, they weren't talking about how bad slavery was. Did I hear that right?
Well, yeah, every society in our history, slavery was the rule, not the exception.
Okay. Sure. So like, what's your point?
Just because they weren't talking about it being bad. Let's say we agree with that. I don't, but like, let's say nobody said slavery was a bad thing until all of a sudden in the 1800s, we decided it was bad.
Probably. Does that mean that did.
Right. You probably, like I say, I'm not saying that's true. I don't think that's true at all, but let's assume, it was still bad though, right? Like it wasn't good because nobody said it was bad. Are we on agreement on that?
Well, today it is bad. Back then, was it bad? No.
Why not?
Well, I'll bring up another one. I'm not trying to agree here.
No. We're going to talk about that one.
Tell me when it's okay. History in past or present or future. Tell me when it's okay for one human being to own another human being. Tell me when it's okay. Your turn, Ruben.
Well, that's depending on what society you are, all had laws on what made that okay.
No. Forget the laws.
We're talking about moral.
When it's okay morally for one human to own another human, history or present. When is it okay?
Well, back then it was okay.
Nope. We're not talking about legal.
You're saying it was morally okay back in the Old Testament.
In general, yes, morally, legally.
Why was it okay? Let me ask you this. Do you think if you'd have been a slave who'd been regularly beaten by his master, do you think you would have felt like it was okay because it was legal?
Well, I mean, you got to keep in mind slavery was hypocrisy as well.
I'm asking you about what's morally acceptable for one human to own another human. I'm not talking about whether God sanctioned it in the Old Testament or whether it was legal or anything. I'm talking about the moral acceptance of it. Do you think it's okay to own another human ever in any circumstance?
Yes, it was.
Okay. I disagree. I think it's abhorrent that you hold that position.
Disgusting, fascist view.
But look at today's controversy. We got abortion. 2000.
What about abortion?
No.
Complaining about a third trimester abortion. And now you're going to disagree. You see where I'm getting at?
What are you talking about? Well, no, I don't see our society.
That would be a fallacy to just judge people that were having third trimester abortions 2,000 years ago. That's a fallacy.
I genuinely don't care about anything besides the fact that you just said that slavery is okay sometimes.
Yeah, I think I'm sorry.
Probably, I'm not interested in anything else there.
I think we're probably done with your arguments because you're defending slavery. And there is no context. Yeah, I would challenge you to just sit with yourself for a little bit and think about how you would feel if you were a slave in the Old Testament days, in the Civil War era, or present day in some other country, how you would feel if you did not have the freedom to come and go as you pleased and you were owned by another human and you were beaten if you did a misstep. You think about that, Ruben, before you start defending it. I think we need to move on.
Absolutely disgusting. Two in a row.
Boom.
People saying it's okay to commit heinous atrocities.
But we're the immoral atheists. Woo!
Right. I did want to, like, anytime we call somebody who promotes slavery, anytime we get some fascist on here who thinks it's okay to own people, I always do want to ask him about slavery in the United States. What time did it stop being a bad thing? You know, when was the historical context that you would have been okay with it? But honestly, I feel sick letting those calls go on anymore.
I just can't talk to him after that. I really can't.
It's rough, dude. It's so rough. Let's see here. So we've got a lot of different calls here, and I like this one a lot. This is Kyle from Ohio. No pronouns given. Says that the world requires a lot of components to come into existence, and it requires intelligence to bring all that together. Kyle, how are you today?
I'm doing all right.
Awesome. How are you? What did you want to talk about specifically? We got just a couple of minutes left, and I want to hear you out.
Okay. Basically, the world is like that 100-piece puzzle that you can buy at the store, and if one piece was out of place or didn't fit, you know, nothing would be able to work and come together to make the picture, and it takes a thinking mind to create that.
So what about on Venus? It has similar pieces, but they're not in the same order. Things are a little bit different, and there's no life there. Did it require a thinking mind to do that, or is it just here?
That's why Earth is unique, because Earth has every piece of the puzzle to sustain life.
So, right. But that's what I'm asking is that, like, the pieces are in the same order, are in order here. They're not in order there. They're in a different order on other planets. So clearly there are some arrangements that allow for life. There are some arrangements that don't. We see all sorts of arrangements all over the solar system, all over the galaxy. We see all sorts of different planets with all sorts of different conditions. But there's no, they're like snowflakes. There's no two that's exactly alike. This one happens to have life on it. Why is this one has to be specially controlled by an intelligent mind? Do all those other ones, do the intelligent mind make all those uninhabitable on purpose as well?
Okay, I'll tell you why. Because let's say if you take away trees or air or water, then life will cease to exist without that piece.
Sure. But you understand, that would just make us like one of the other countless planets.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. That's a thing that's necessary for life. But that would just make this planet like any of the other infinite planets out there. So, like, the fact that this one's weird in the same way that all the other ones are weird, this one's just a different kind of weird. Like, why is that a necessary argument for
I wouldn't use the word weird. I would use the word special, because this is the only planet that can contain life. So if you take away air or trees or water, then there is no life. So obviously a creator had to put that puzzle piece there.
Okay, let's give you that. Who's the creator? Who's the creator? Let's give you that. Who's the creator that did this?
Well, the God that I believe in is
God of life. Of course.
Right. Happens to be that one, right?
How convenient that is, Kyle, that your God that you happen to believe in, not the other gods, past and present, but the one you happen to believe in is the creator that brought all this into existence.
Right.
Aren't you lucky?
I'm talking about my belief, not their belief. I'm talking about my belief. This is why.
But your belief is in the God that brought all this together. Wow. It just
How do you dispute that? Like, I'm right.
It just so happens.
I was right about the puzzle thing.
We said we were going to give it to you. It just so happens I study that stuff for a living. I'm a biologist. I specialize in evolution. I study, like, how life starts and where it comes from and how it evolves from there. Evolution doesn't have anything to do with how life starts. It just happens to be something that I studied in my undergrad independent field for fun. But, like, those are the questions that I answer for a living and, like, look into. And so, like, what you said was wrong. You know, you take away trees or whatever like that. Like, there's a lot. Trees weren't always here and there was life here. So, like, there's a lot there that's kind of up in the air with what you said. But what we're saying is, even if we allowed that, even if we accepted what you said, that doesn't give us anything about any creator. And it certainly doesn't give us anything about specifically the God of the Bible.
Yeah, if you take one of the way the puzzle pieces, life will cease to exist. That's why there's God who created everything. I mean, think about this. I mean, us as humans, everything that we have, we created. It just didn't pop up out of the sky, you know what I mean? Like our clothes, food, houses, whatever, you know?
We got, like, you know, plants from the earth.
So if
we got the plants.
If you take away everything that we have, we're just running around naked and doing, I'm sorry.
Like, we didn't make this stuff out of nothing, right? There was already stuff here. There was already food here on the earth that we now eat. There was already materials to make clothes that we now wear. There was already all the materials to make cars that we now drive. Like, none of this came out of nothing, right? So we had the pieces here. We did stuff with them. Life is the same way. The pieces were already here. And then, like, life just kind of happened one day. It's the same thing. There were pieces, and then they started doing stuff. And when you study life at a molecular level, it is just chemistry, the same laws of chemistry and physics that apply everywhere else in the universe, just acting on these molecules the same way they act on any other molecules. It's not magic. It's just a thing that happens in the universe sometimes. So, like, I don't see why you need a God for that. And the first thing that I said was, like, all these other planets that are uninhabitable and barren, plus there's plenty of places that may have life on them that we're looking at right now. What if we find life on one of those places? You would have to say that all of that is part of this too, that life, that your God made this massive universe with billions of galaxies, with hundreds of billions of stars, with hundreds of billions of planets, just so that one of them could have a bunch of life. And out of the millions and millions of species on this planet, one species of ape gets to have a relationship with that God. What's that? And you happen to know it because you were born into the right family that taught you the right things, that now you know this God. You don't see how that's a really, like, a lot of coincidences?
So you think humans came from apes?
Humans are apes. We are a species of great apes.
Oh my! So you go around throwing your poop at the wall and everything.
God damn. Do you know what the definition of an ape is? It has nothing to do with throwing poop.
Oh, God,
it's a physiological thing.
Well, that's what monkeys do, ain't it? That's what apes do. Gorillas. They throw poop at each other. We don't throw poop at each other.
I don't know. You've never worked at a daycare before, but like, I got to tell you, man.
I've been in some parts of the country where I think that right? has happened. So,
I've been, we've been there. Okay, the whole thing is, like,
I see what happens.
You realize that that's a silly argument, though, right? Like, for real. Like, just honestly between you and me.
I'm going to let you all go for your time.
Okay.
This conversation.
All right. Have an awesome day, Kyle.
All right, Kyle. Thank you for enlightening us.
Goodness.
Oh boy.
All right. What a
fun day. You believe you throw poop at the wall?
Oh my goodness. Well, that was a fun show. Dave, do you have anything before we start wrapping up?
No, I think these last three calls kind of did me in.
I gotta take a nap after that. I encourage everyone to go just learn taxonomy. Go learn about why we classify different animals to different things. You'd be surprised to find that throwing poop has nothing to do with, you know, what kind of animal you are. I wonder if Kyle thinks that we're animals. I should have asked him that before he left.
Nope, we're specially created in God's image.
Oh, don't you know? Yeah, that's the thing. We're too big to be bacteria. We move too much to be plants. But for some reason, we're just not quite animals. That's the one I hear all the time. I'm not putting words in his mouth. By the way, before we do wrap up, I did want to say, I wanted to say this at the beginning and I forgot. I'm going to throw it in here at the end really quick. On the last show that I was on, a caller called and talked about the parting of the Red Sea. And he said that it was as a result of a tsunami that like a bunch of rocks fell in the ocean in the Mediterranean and it like pulled the water back. And I said that that makes no sense because if water is displaced by putting rocks into it, it's going to go forward, not backwards. I actually got an email from a geologist who said that there actually is a certain circumstance, a very, very rare circumstance where you can add a bunch of stuff to water and it creates a certain tsunami that the crest builds so quickly that it does pull water from in front of it. So that actually can happen. But he was quick to say, even though that wasn't right, the rest of it was, because there's no way people would be able to walk past it in time. And also the Bible says there were two walls of water, not one. So like the whole thing still makes no sense. But the one thing that I said about how tsunamis can't form, that was inaccurate. And I wanted to point it out because I freaking love learning new stuff. And I want to make sure everybody else learns new stuff too.
Remind them about our Facebook groups.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I got it right here. Thanks so much for being here. Please go to our Facebook groups and check those out. Let's see. I actually have a thing about it right here where you can go and check out these different groups, because we've got places where you can try out your arguments on different people. And that's super exciting. I actually don't have it written down, but it's okay. There's the list right there. This is the Atheist Experience fan group. You can go and be a fan, or you can try out your arguments with different people. And that's super duper cool. As always, we thank you all so much for being here. We thank you so much for watching. We thank you so much for your amazing calls. There's another one, Atheist versus Theist debate. I apologize sincerely. I can't find the exact, I had a list of them.
I didn't have it either. So
Just missing. It was weird is that I looked at this list 2 days ago and it was there, but I guess I broke it somehow. But thank you everybody for watching, for calling in.
Thank you for calling in, everyone. Awesome. We enjoyed being on with always. You first. Yep.
I Good always fun. Enjoy being with you, Dave. Have an awesome rest of your day and never stop learning. Bye-bye.
Start opening your eyes, to start questioning the bullshit everyone around you buys. You think it's any of your business what goes on between my...
It's time to get sexy, so watch Secular Sexuality Live Thursdays at 7 p.m. Central. Visit tiny.cc/YTSS and call into the show at 512-991-9242 or connect to the show online at tiny.cc/callsex.